Welcome to Tom Rhodes Radio. Thank you for listening. This episode was recorded in Amsterdam at the American Hotel, which is actually one of my favorite spots on the planet Earth. Today's guest is Greg Shapiro. Greg is one of the nicest people you will ever meet in show business. He's originally from Chicago. He moved to Amsterdam in 1994, and he became one of the founding members of Boom Chicago. Boom Chicago is the mecca of improv comedy in Amsterdam and probably Europe. A lot of former members have gone on to Saturday Night Live. Jordan Peele from Comedy Central's Key and Peele actually was a member there in the early 2000s. And Greg, he's married a Dutch woman, beautiful, wonderful, supremely intelligent Dutch woman, and they have two beautiful children they're raising in Amsterdam. Greg is kind of the American expert on Dutch culture. He's referred to as the American Nederlander, and he just published a book called How to Be Orange, which is all about the ins and outs of Dutch culture, from its most lovable traits to its most odd and hilarious. And Greg actually produced my recent theater tour of Holland. This conversation was recorded on the last day of that tour. And I have to say, I honestly believe that if Greg's car would have broken down on any one of these days, he would have given me a piggyback ride to make sure that I got to the show on time. He's a unique, lovable human being, and it's my pleasure to present to you now the one and only Mr. Greg Shapiro. Greg Shapiro, ladies and gentlemen, Greg Shapiro.
Yo, hey.
Hey, we are at the end. Tonight's the last night of my Dutch tour.
Right.
Greg Shapiro presents Tom Rhodes.
It is such a pleasure to be able to turn this weird side project into a kind of sustainable thing, more than my solo shows at the moment.
I have to say, I've done a number of tours of Dutch theaters, and it's a tour of small Dutch theaters.
Yep.
I think perfect size. You know, 100 to 200 seat rooms. And I have to say, this has been the most enjoyable.
That is high praise indeed.
Driving with you every day to these gigs. And
it's weird, I know.
The theaters have been lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, crowds turn out are great, you know. I mean, and we get great comedians who come through the Netherlands. Sometimes they stay for one, maybe two nights. But yeah, I mean, here you are, world-class headliner. Like, let's give you a proper tour, because Eindhoven needs comedy, too.
I think the Schiller Theater in Utrecht.
Right?
Oh, my God, we did that last night, and Mozart slept there when he was a kid.
Yeah, crazy.
Whatever that building was.
They got the plaque of the stone
in 1735,
right?
Or whatever that was.
Yeah, yeah.
But that couple, that older Dutch couple that run that Schiller Theater in Utrecht, were the most Dutch couple. Like, if you'd have been casting a movie of an older Dutch couple, the guy had like a walrus mustache.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pot belly, and he's bald on the top.
With the long hair on the side. Yeah, right, yeah.
Oh, and
that's Stafe, and Honey is his wife. And I'm like, yeah, should I put on some music? They're like, no, we got it. And they put on, it wasn't Schlager, I mean, but it was just like kind of oompa. Classic.
That old Dutch Oompa Loompa
Hoist
your beer
right.
Organ music.
And it fit perfectly with this space. But it's a typical mom and pop. Anyway, I'm from Chicago. So we had Storefront Theater, where I had some of my first theatrical experience. I mean, there was an empty storefront.
You know what it reminded me of when I lived in San Francisco?
Yeah.
The Western Addition was a Nubian area.
Okay.
And the Church of John Coltrane.
Okay.
It was the African Orthodox Church of St. John. But
okay.
It was the Church of John Coltrane.
Wow.
Was in a storefront church on Divisadero.
Wow.
And there were instruments lying everywhere because everyone's supposed to pick up an instrument and we're all a part of the music.
Yeah.
But it was somehow, the church was founded on Coltrane's album Love Supreme.
Okay.
And that's what that place reminded me of last night.
Right, yeah. You can see how there was a virtuoso spirit
It's
in
like
there.
The Coltrane church, or
right?
The Mozart, the comedy church and, right. and Utrecht.
And it kind of brings out the virtuoso in the performer. That's what I saw last night. So, yeah.
I was happy to stretch out. And then the Theater Zuidplein, Rotterdam, that was one of the best.
Yeah.
As much as I always make fun of Rotterdam, I think that was probably the best comedy audience of the tour. They were great.
You're totally biased, I think, because you had your in-laws in the audience that right. night. That was special for me.
Yeah.
And I was wondering what, you know... special little one-liners you might put in there for the benefit of the home crowd. And, you told the story about the chicken hearts.
The grandma fed me chicken hearts the first time I visited. And then I guess they think I like it because they fed me chicken hearts every time I've been. And I've told my wife, hey, you can't do chicken hearts more than twice in a year. but I think it's... Did you notice how that was only funny in Rotterdam?
I guess, yeah, right.
The next two nights it fell on its ass.
Right, yeah.
But because I had my wife's family there and it was Rotterdam where it happened, I don't know, maybe that...
There's been
put some magic pixie dust on that joke. Just for that night.
Just a little bit. And yet, I mean, here we were yesterday being interviewed and talking about what is unique to a Dutch kind of audience. But yeah, now that you mention it, we've done, like 8 dates over the past 10 days. And there are a lot of differences, what do you know, between Dutch cities, you know, like between the major metropolitan area, the Randstad, but also like Eindhoven or whatever. Yeah, it's the Eindhoven audience, you know, was different from the Utrecht audience, was different from the Rotterdam audience.
Very well-behaved, eager Dutch audience. And then the expats that were there.
Right.
Because Eindhoven is the capital of Philips and it's the computer technology.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised, though. Normally, that's who shows up. Those English speakers, you know, who are looking for a night out because there's not much in English. But that night we played there, it was like 75% Dutch speakers. They'd never even come out to a previous Greg Presents tour or seen me before. They were just like, oh, this looks good. And, I mean, and some people knew you from,
it's nice. I'm touched. I mean that was 10 years ago when I was on television here, and I'm touched that a few people still remember it.
Yeah,
You know.
So people didn't know me.
It's enough to come out and spend a hard ticket.
Right, they knew you. I mean, so, that was great. And that was a full house that, in Eindhoven. So,
You've had really good taste on the comedians that you've brought over.
Thank you.
And I have to say, they're kind of a similar style in that they're all edgy and intelligent.
Yeah, humor. That's my favorite, you know, and that's kind of the carte blanche that my management gave me. I mean, they said, look, you've got a solo tour. What if we did this side project? So we had a couple people who were coming from Edinburgh, Americans, you know, they're already over on the continent, i.e., you know, traveling over to Amsterdam, whatever, after doing Edinburgh. And, we got them in town. Why not give them a stage, put up a show, a minimal amount. It started with a minimal amount of promo and stuff. But, so Desiree Birch is a really closer to what the Dutch would call cabaret. And she's also uses a lot of comedy. I'd love to have her back. But then, pretty quickly we went into just some of my personal contacts from over the years.
You got Steve Hughes, one of my favorite comedians alive.
Right. And,
Pete Johansson, Glenn Wool.
Yeah.
Brendan Burns.
Yeah.
I think you've had really, really smart taste in your humor.
Isn't that... Well, apparently these are the people that I attract to me because I kind of... Yeah, just know these guys on a...
But these guys, myself, are never going to phone it in. They're always going to...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, one of us could have the flu and be on our deathbed, but
we'd
still try and give the greatest mind-blowing hour performance we could.
Full credit. Exactly. Yeah. And that is another trademark, I think, of these tours that I've been doing. Because, these Dutch theaters where we're going, it's not a bar, it's not the back of a club or whatever. They're kind of like, you know, these proper theaters with proper technical teams, and you're like, where's your tech writer? Like, we need a mic, man, and some nice lights would be okay. But no, they're like, well, when are you going to get here? You know, at 2 in the afternoon, so we can have a proper tech through, and then we can all have dinner, and then we can go get in the zone and do the show. And that's like death for the comedians I'm bringing, you know, like, I'm saying we'll show up at what showtime is 8:30? Like, we'll be there at 8. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that they keep saying, like, well, when is the, what's the show running time? You know that, right? I mean, because it's a show that you do. We don't really know. And I tell them, like, look, well, I do the first half, we'll take a break, and then the second half is going to be minimum 45. But it never is. Like you're saying, you know, the comedians I've had over so far, you hit 45,
well,
like, and
it's like,
I'm just getting going, man. Yeah. Now I got the, you know, I got a feel for this, you know, what this crowd. And it's always, you know, an hour plus. And there's, I encourage people to try out new material. I mean, and if you're working on a new hour, if you just want to play around and find out who's in the crowd and play off that. Because, yeah, someone like you, you've got so many. My favorite moments of your show is when you pull out something from your back pocket and, you know, afterward it's like, you know, I never thought I would tell that story in front of a crowd, but it always kills.
Right, like last night, the you tricked Ida Police, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was graffiti I had seen in Utrecht years ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago, and it was there for a few years when you would take the train from Amsterdam to Utrecht.
I remember that thing, yeah.
Someone had painted, not in spray paint, in very nice lettering.
Right.
You tricked police, eat a dick up.
Right. Not eat a dick.
Not eat a dick.
Eat a dick
eat
up.
Eat a dick up.
Yes.
Which is so specific. Like they're just, just getting every morsel of it.
Finger licking good.
And then the Steve-O story.
Oh, God, yeah.
When I had done Steve-O from Jackass was a guest on my show.
Yeah.
And I took him out, and there were drugs involved, and then he was disappeared for 2 days, and then
anyway,
he was in Utrecht, and I knew where he was. And my last piece of advice was, dude, you do not want to go to Utrecht right now.
And he dared to
and
tell
he went
that
to
story.
Utrecht. Yeah, so I told that on stage.
On stage in Utrecht.
Where else are you going to have that opportunity?
I know. They loved it, yeah. You pulled out a story about Vancouver. Someone said I'm from Vancouver. You were like, oh. What about all those suicides in Vancouver?
Yeah.
Never thought that.
That's something really interesting in the world right now. These human feet that keep washing up on the shores of British Columbia.
What is that?
It's been a phenomenon.
Right, right. Yeah. And, you talked about, is it a conspiracy theory or is this an official sort of explanation? Forensic evidence indicates that the fish are able to eat everything except for, they can't eat through the running shoes.
They can't get at the feet because the feet. It's the marine biologists have a theory that it's the suicides from the Vancouver bridges.
Okay.
And the fish eat the bodies, but they can't get at the feet because the feet are in the running shoes. So that's why the feet have been washing.
But that's what I remember of the joke.
I'm like an encyclopedia of grim details.
No, but then you give a compliment to the Canadians in the audience by saying like, isn't that great that even your suicidal Canadian people are still so addicted to fitness.
I think it says a lot about how committed to fitness Canadians are. That they would jog right up to the moment that they killed themselves. Now, you know, that was the thing I loved the most, or that one of the things I discovered while I lived in Holland was Holland cares so much about the arts that even, like, small villages have, like, a great theater.
World-class.
There are so many world-class small to medium to large to epic fantastic theaters.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed this one. Like, I had done the one in Eindhoven before. That one, Theater Park Theater, is that what it's called?
Yep. Yeah. And they got any number of different, geez, that's like a 70s era, or I don't know, 50s, 60s, just a concrete bunker that had a full rehab. And they put wood paneling, I mean, wood's just fresh. They really redid it. They did it up well. And that room where we played, they can bring in a bar and do table service, which I thought was great. And so they tried it once, and they thought, oh, maybe we should do that again. I was like, yes.
That's the bizarre thing as an American that you have to get used to over here in Europe is that they take an intermission.
Yeah.
There were so many times in London where I'm like, I'm next on stage, and I'm all like amped up, and I'm ready to go, and it's happened to me in Holland, too. And they're like, we're taking a break.
Yeah.
What? Oh, I thought I was next.
Got to
wait 15 minutes.
Right.
Go through the cyclone, tempest, build up again
before
you come on. Whereas in North America, we have table service, and you can sit there, and the show doesn't have to be interrupted.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about Europeans that they don't want to make the most money.
That is weird.
Because America, we have certain ways to get... extract the money from the pocket.
Yeah, two-drink minimum, whatever.
Well, just you keep the... And then people get pissed if the waiter doesn't come around.
Yeah, yeah. I have had shows here. Like, my solo tour, my first one I did, I built in an intermission, specifically, so that maybe theaters would think, oh, yeah, that guy, he plans an intermission into his show so we can sell more drinks. I mean, and at least that's the thinking that I had. But sure enough, I'd do a tour, and I'd go to one of these nice theaters in some small town or wherever, and then they'd be giving out the free drinks at the intermission. Oh, it's a complimentary free drink. And they were actually kind of mad at me, like, most people don't have an intermission.
Hmm.
They just, do the 85, 90 minutes or whatever, an Abendfüllend.
Now, let's go over your history. Yes. Now, you're originally from Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Presumably, that's where you got interested in sketch comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was my basis. Like, I mean,
where'd you go? Like Northwestern?
Yes, yes. I mean,
I knew it. I could smell it.
Is it that obvious? Is it, but no, I mean, I'm a townie. It's embarrassing. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, the north side of Chicago. I was like born on the south side, moved to the north side, ended up going into the suburbs with my folks back in like the very early 80s. So, I mean, if you can think of any movie from that, like Breakfast Club to Ferris Bueller to 16 Candles, that was your childhood.
That was your teen years.
Basically, right, yeah. And
you like tried to make the odometer go backwards on your dad's Aston Martin.
Yeah, right.
And it went through the glass window.
I know where that was filmed.
And then
exactly.
You had a parade.
Yeah. I know the people who lived in that house, you know, right, yeah. And yeah, I mean, everybody around me was getting bit parts in these movies and stuff. And I had an interest in theater and improvisation specifically. So, it came time to pick some kind of school. A lot of friends of mine as well had parents who were working at Northwestern University. And the parents were like, you know, we get a huge discount here, and it's a good enough school, so guess what, kid? You can apply wherever you want, but you're going here. And it turns out that I ended up sort of jumping into that flow, and I did, you know, 4 years of university in the same hometown where I grew up. We were the townies, and, I think that's part of the reason that after 4 years, that we got that wanderlust, you know? All of our friends were going off to school and doing the, you know, college, you know, study away from home, move away from home, and we didn't really have that. So, yeah, when a couple friends of mine, Andrew and Pep, they've known each other since they were like 9 years old. I knew them. We all knew each other since like 15 years old, middle of high school. We were putting on the student, you know, student-produced shows and writing the student shows. And then going to university, too.
These are the founders of Boom Chicago.
And Andrew and Pep turned into not only the best friends and, but the founders of Boom Chicago. They were smoking a joint on Lyde's Upline in Amsterdam in 92. And they're like, you know, wouldn't it be cool? And it turned into this real plan. And they came over in 93. They took over the back of someone's bar and just built it up from nothing. I was, at the time, very committed to my theater career in New York and paying rent on credit cards. So when the call came that they were ready to do it for another summer, that was 1994, and I said yes, a big yes, and I jumped in. And I realized, my training in theater was to find a group of people who had the same kind of artistic vision and put down roots, you know, and do whatever it takes to put on a show. And so that happened in Amsterdam. And
well, it's amazing for people who've never been to Amsterdam, and I've been coming here for years.
Yeah.
Boom Chicago is such a staple of Dutch tourism.
Yeah.
Right on Lides of Plain.
Yeah.
For many, many years.
Right.
And the Boom Chicago, you could see it, and just like great marketing. Always had flyers and hotels and people around the city like hustling the show.
That was me at one point. I mean, we were brought
and
over
I mean,
here.
I've talked to people around the world. Like when I've told them I was a comedian and I lived in Amsterdam, they would go, oh, no. do you play Boom Chicago?
Right.
I mean, it like was so marketed so well.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, I think it's ingrained in the Amsterdam visitor's mind.
Yeah, wow. Well, credit to Mr. Andrew Moskos, the the main founder.
So and it like just started out, and, I mean, so then it grew from the back of this bar to when when did it have the the temple on Lides of Plain?
That was a few years in to the whole experience. So it started in 93, and then 5 years in 98, there was this temple, like you said, that used to be a techno house music kind of dance club. And someone was crazy enough to say, like, would you guys want to make this space into a comedy club? You know, we ended up being in charge of the renovations of this, like, historic building. And I remember there was just, we had to rip out everything. There was a wall of mirrors, and it was kind of cracked and broken. So there was a process of like ripping through this wall of mirrors, and what was behind it? Another wall of mirrors that was even more cracked and broken, like just stripped out everything, built it up again from kind of nothing. And oddly, at the 20-year mark of Boom Chicago, there was a thought to build it up into a dance club again, like comedy theater early evening, dance club late evening, and it turns out that was not a very good combination. So for the 20-year mark, Boom Chicago moved into a bigger, better theater space, and the Lights Applying Theater right now is back to being a dance club.
And they just moved to the Rosen Theater, which we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah,
that place is of huge personal historical significance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, you know what?
I've never... In the Tom Rhodes history.
That's what I'm... Yeah, man. And that's another thing that we have in common that I guess I haven't talked about a lot. But, I mean, you had a show on Dutch commercial television. I had a show on Dutch commercial television. That's kind of the reason that I went solo from Boom Chicago.
Oh.
Because... and you were helping Comedy Central. Like, you know, there at the beginning. And when Comedy Central Netherlands kicked off, they... had a bunch of shows that they bought, and they also wanted to produce their own show, and they picked the Comedy Central News is what they called it, and they needed an anchor. I did like an audition, I got the gig, and Boom Chicago was like producing it and writing it, and and it was fun for a couple
seasons.
Cool, what'd
you do? You ran around the country?
Unlike you know, you get to go on the street as well. We delegated that. It was sort of like an ensemble experience. So we had Lauren Flans, who's now doing MTV in the States, and she was doing, you know, Flans on the street and doing a lot of the same kind of stuff that you were doing, experiencing Gay Pride Day, going into, you know, Svarte Piet Parade, and, you know, figuring out why do Dutch people work through lunch, you know, and only eat milk and a sandwich or whatever. That was some good stuff. I was there just doing a green screen, you know, news thing. It was kind of like it turned into a combination of like Weekend Update and The Muppet Show. They insisted on having a laugh track. I thought, boy, maybe we can stop doing that.
Yeah.
But
it's surprising that hasn't been retired years ago.
But
now let's go back to Boom Chicago.
Yeah,
because Boom Chicago is an improv comedy institution, not unlike Second City in Chicago and Toronto.
Thank you.
And many great performers have gone on to do bigger and better things, like Saturday Night Live.
Who
was on Saturday Night Live?
Well, you know, I'm going to mention Pep Rosenfeld, one of my best friends ever. And he, was always the artistic director of Boom Chicago. And he took some time off, actually, late 90s. And he got himself on as a writer on Saturday Night Live. He ended up bouncing back and coming back to continue his run as artistic director at Boom Chicago. But meanwhile, Seth Meyers... At the same time as Pep came back here, Seth Meyers went out there and got an audition and nailed it.
So Seth Meyers was in at Boom Chicago?
Seth Meyers was right out of Northwestern as well.
Really?
And yeah, I think that's kind of this.
And how long was he in Amsterdam?
It was from 97 through 98. He was like in the ensemble. 99 and 2000, he was kind of doing his own side projects, and he moved back to the States in like 2000, and then in 2001 he landed SNL, ended up on the first ever SNL episode right after 9/11. That's
wow.
His claim to fame. And he ended up staying on that show as one of the longest running. Yeah, like only Daryl Hammond has been on that show longer.
Well,
he was head writer pretty quickly because Seth Meyers, man, he was just a natural.
Does Daryl have the record for the longest?
I think he still does. Wow. And yet someone
he started open mic nights in Orlando.
No, really?
I've known Daryl for years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ha! Well, he still holds the record.
Interesting.
But
so, any other juggernauts?
Sure. Oh, God, yeah. I would love to give shout-outs to some people that, you know, you might not know of yet. I mean, but Key and Peele is just...
Yeah, we know them.
They're having such fun.
They're in their fifth season on Comedy Central?
Yeah man. Jordan Peele.
They're a household name by now.
That's... And isn't that so great?
So, he did...
Jordan Peele.
He did Boom Chicago.
Jordan Peele came from Boom. He started out in, what was it, like 2001, 2003. I think he went back to the U.S. around 2003 or 4. Ended up on Mad TV. And it turns out that, actually, this was on the recent interview that Key and Peele did with Jon Stewart. They gave a shout-out to Boom Chicago because that's actually how those two guys met. And you mentioned Second City as well, like right around...
I think I've drank with that guy. I know him.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I was living right by Liza Plain on Longa Liza Dwarfstraat.
Yeah, right,
and very often I would come over there and drink with the Boom Chicago guys.
Yeah, we would have the late night shows, you know, they would have like a celebrity
come in. Which is great because
in
Chicago, one of my favorite cities in the world, and I've done Zanies for years.
Right.
Second City's only like a block away.
Exactly.
And there's the Old Town Ale House.
Yeah.
On North,
and that's
where all the comedians and improv comedians go.
Yeah,
so it was like always the Chicago thing to like for improv comedians and stand-ups to be drinking together and talking.
Yeah,
and so I had a little of that flavor.
Yeah,
The times I hung out at Boom Chicago.
Maybe you can tell me who's better at doing bits after a show, the improv comedians or the stand-up comedians? Also, you know, like just riffing on each other and.
I've never seen guys overly trying too hard.
Yeah.
People have always just been fun, and it's like you're after the show, you're unwinding.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
No, I know. I've spent time around enough theater people that when you keep trying to like sing show tunes after the show is over, like, all right, I've had enough of that.
Right.
I don't hang out with those
let's
people.
Let's get rid of that guy. That would be my first thought.
Somebody's
doing the Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Hey, look how silly this napkin is.
Let's get rid of this
fucking prick.
Yeah. That Old Town Ale House was always an interesting mix, too. For me, I mean, I grew up in Chicago with the whole Second City thing, and there was this definite, I would call it a rift, between stand-up comedy and improv comedy. I talked to improv people who said, stand-up, we don't do that. And stand-up people who rightfully looked at improv people and were like, oh, come on. You know.
I've always said it's a comedy muscle I don't have.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is my impression of me doing improv.
Right.
Wait a minute. Just give me a minute. I think it's a whole different comedic muscle.
Yeah. Well, that's
and
how I feel.
I mean, I'm sure that you know, and I'm sure some stand-ups look down on it. I've never, you know.
Yeah, but it's funny how we come from the same kind of background too. I mean, doing a mixture of sketch and you know, solo performing, stand-up, or whatever.
So, are you still involved in doing the sketches at Boom Chicago?
Yes and no. I mean, we're long friends, old friends, so many people, like, you know, Seth Meyers, Jordan Peele, right now, who is Amber Ruffin, is about, you know, the first black female ever to become a writer for one of these late night talk shows. So she's going to be writing for the Seth Meyers show.
Now, you've lived in Holland for 20 years.
Yeah, I'm hitting 20 years this year.
And you just wrote a book in the last year, How to Be Orange.
Yeah, man.
So let's go. You come over here to help Boom Chicago get off the ground, and yeah. It's gone on to be an Amsterdam institution.
Right.
It's catapulted a number of people into stratospheric fame.
Yes.
And you married a beautiful Dutch woman. Oh my God, your wife captured my wife and I's heart.
Oh.
Immediately. Absolutely love her.
Oh, she got new glasses since then.
It wasn't the glasses, brother. It was her heart. And her intelligence. So you got a fantastic Dutch woman. You got two beautiful kids. You're living over here.
Yeah.
And so I think you know the Dutch pretty well.
Yeah, I've gone native.
You impregnated one of them. I mean,
yeah,
you've reproduced.
Yeah.
With them.
No, I know. Yeah.
So you write this book, How to Be Orange.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Indeed. I mean,
so all about Dutch culture and
my
and
take.
For those of you who don't know, my late night talk show, the whole best thing about it was me experiencing Dutch culture, and that was I love the topic, and I would think you're a much better expert than I.
I've been putting in the time. That's true. I mean, well, you had that moment of saying, like, I didn't want to be forgotten in my own home country, and
I went back to the States.
You went back for a while, and I think I just missed that boat, man.
You never had that problem.
Well, I was talking.
You thought, fuck America.
I guess, in a way. my family, I love them. You know, my wife will point out that, you know, sometimes it might be a little bit easier for all of us to get along when there's an ocean between us. But I love them. I love visiting them. I love going back and doing shows. And I do still have that link to America, but it's turning out to be this, like, Dutch-specific link to America. I'll pick up gigs in the States for, like, the Dutch Club of Chicago or the Dutch Club of New York. And those gigs are super fun. 'Cause for every American who's come over here to the Netherlands and end up putting down roots here, there are so many Dutch people who did the same thing over
right. Okay.
In Chicago,
so tantalize
York,
so. Me and the listener with some Dutch knowledge.
Exactly.
You know, they love their cheese sandwiches. They like their bike path.
Definitely. You know, and I've been talking about the basics. You know, so blasting some of the stereotypes as well. You know, people call the Dutch cheap, and yet, you know, if you look at the economic figures, whatever, like per capita, there's no country that gives more to charity per year than the Dutch, you know? And it's the way they think about themselves. I just try to tease out the deeper truth, you know? There's drugs and sex and drugs and bikes.
Well, and I think that's all, it's like the three-card money game. They're moving around the shells.
Yeah.
They want you to think.
Yeah.
That Holland is all about tulips, weed, and prostitutes when it's actually about these corporations getting tax breaks.
Yeah, right.
And the big economic banking power.
Yeah,
it's one of the largest banking entities in the world.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, this is the birthplace of capitalism.
Right.
I mean,
so they want us to think it's weed and prostitutes.
Right, yeah, yeah.
When
and
all
they're
this
happy.
Stuff's happening.
Yes. That was, you know, I must admit, when I first came over here, my, you know, American upbringing led me to believe that the Netherlands was, a great former glory city, country, but, you know, it's sort of now turned into one big Sodom and Gomorrah that's fallen on hard times. But, you know, I came over here and just, I had my eyes open, man. It's funny how many values are shared from the U.S. and the Netherlands, and it's all the same kind of blueprint, you know? You can just trace it right back. A couple great books that I've been reading, you know, like Russell Shorto will write the history of New York, you know, the island at the center of the universe, or this recent book, Amsterdam, the most liberal city ever.
What's the best thing you learned from it?
That in America, you know, I was sort of taught that American history started With the British, basically, you know, and the Enlightenment and the British Enlightenment and these thinkers came along. John Locke, though, he wrote his stuff in Amsterdam. And then Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. But like a century before that, there was some Dutch guy in New Amsterdam who was writing the Remonstrance of New Netherland. And if you think about what the British were doing at that time, you know, like Protestant crazy burning witches, and it was the Dutch colony that was responsible for open society, freedom of commerce, freedom of religion.
Well, and I mean, okay, so you have a guy like Spinoza.
Yeah.
Who, how would you describe Spinoza? Because he was branded a heretic.
Yeah, yeah, by one church or another.
He was Jewish, he was thrown out of his synagogue.
Right.
And he said that it was the universe and the stars and that God is nature, that there isn't God.
Yeah, right.
God is nature.
Yeah. I mean, he's like...
So he's one of the greatest thinkers in the world. And yeah. His best friends were the DeWitt brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was the year? 1792, something like that.
Ooh, yeah, way
and
back.
They had a disastrous year in Holland.
Yeah.
And they killed the DeWitt brothers, and not only killed them, they cut their bodies open.
Yeah, those
they
are the...
took out their guts and everything, and yeah. their penises.
Right.
And they ate them.
Oh, sure.
Some people had they hated these people so much. So
yeah,
and then when the Dutch, the Catholics had to hide.
Yeah.
And the Protestants ran everything.
That was like Rwanda.
They were like Rwandan killings.
Yeah.
In the street, they would bash people's heads in with sticks.
This was ground zero of like the religious wars back in the day. But here was Spinoza who came out of it, and apparently Amsterdam, who ended up championing the ideas of secular humanism, of not either Catholic or Protestant, but just like we want to do our own thing. I'm forgetting the name of the sheriff who famously took all the edicts from the Holy Roman Empire back, you know, from the Catholic-dominated dominion and said, you know, like, thanks, I got all your rules, but we'll enforce them, you know, as need be. And didn't want to make an example out of everybody. But, I mean, yeah, that's the basis that even goes now to, like, yeah, marijuana is still technically illegal, but we'll enforce it as we see fit.
And that's it. The Dutch are historically great business people.
Yeah,
and,
if it's good for business.
Most Dutch people don't indulge in marijuana and prostitutes.
Right.
They have it because they know it's a moneymaker.
Right. And you've done enough gigs over here, too. I mean, it gets frustrating when you see some of the first time ever outside of the United States comedians, and they come over here and they're like, can you believe it? Oh, you Dutch guys, you got weed and hookers.
Yeah, the worst thing a visiting foreigner comedian can do in Holland is weed jokes.
Yeah.
This is the one place weed jokes don't work.
Right, yeah. They'll drink you know, like 18 beers before they start to want to laugh or...
What are some other tips a foreign performer should know about?
Foreign performer, yeah. Well, you know what? Brendan Burns came over here and he said, this is the only, like, the only place in the world where I turn up the lights on the audience, and that's when the Dutch audience feels more at home. You know, anybody else, you know, you turn up the lights and they feel like, self-conscious. But, apparently Dutch audiences more like, if they're sitting in the dark, it's like they're watching TV. If you put up the lights on them, then they're like, oh, we're in the same space, in the same room with this performer. Maybe we'll respond and let him know we're here.
One thing I like about Dutch people is the open nudity.
Sure.
They're very comfortable with it. I've been around Dutch friends.
Yeah.
And then different family people. And like all of a sudden the mom will take off her sweater and change her bra in front of you.
Yeah. Because it's like human nature, you know?
And I don't have any problem with it.
Well, I will tell you the story that I was saving for... I try to do a different set for you every night. But
I appreciate it.
There was this...
I'm in the back with a yellow legal pad.
Yeah, right, yeah. I know. I mean, you can't really... Yeah. But anyway, there was a story of a bike passing in front of my house. And the mom, you know, like the dad was riding the bike. The mom was sitting on the back of the bike. And she's holding like an infant in her arms. And while she's on the back of the bike, she just whips up her shirt, starts breastfeeding.
Breastfeeding on the back of the bike.
And I'm thinking, wow. Like, yeah, only in Amsterdam. That's
Probably different parts of Asia, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Oh, sure, of course.
Where was the National Geographic photographer?
Exactly. In my brain. I was just headed over.
If you're going to breastfeed on the back of a bike, you should circle around the city, around and around, so everybody can get a good shot of it.
Right, yeah, please. but I mean, it's human nature, and that's the thing. That's the Dutch thing. It's, it's nothing to be ashamed of. And
I do like the way the Dutch celebrate. Like, the Dutch believe in partying. They're very Calvinistic society.
Yeah.
They believe in partying, but only after you've worked a 40-hour work week.
Yeah, right.
And it's the weather's so cold.
Yeah, yeah.
The festivals that they have here.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dutch people are so much fun in the street when they've been drinking.
Yeah, right.
Queen's Day.
How do you describe that?
Day of the year. Yeah. And like, people push pianos out into Vondel Park, and they're doing music, and little kids are doing dance numbers, and people are little impromptu garage sales all over the year, all over the city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they don't do garage sales throughout the year the way we do in North America. They do it one day a year.
Yeah, yeah.
On what? And now Queen's Day is going to be changed to King's Day, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a whole new thing. I mean, yeah, I had spent time over in the UK, you know, and the whole attitude toward the royals over there. I mean, you look at certain, you know, pockets of society who did not care very much for the royal family, you know, and, you know, God Save the Queen and punk rock and whatever. I was, like, hanging out with those people. And I was amazed when I came over here, and even the most, you know, rebellious squatter type students, they were still coming out on Queen's Day, soon to be King's Day, wearing orange, you know, putting the Queen. Maybe there's like an irreverent portrait of the royal family on the t-shirt, but they still come out. I mean, it's...
Everybody loves the royal family, even if you're a punk rocker or a little subversive anti-capitalist. It's beautiful. And then the canals are filled with boats, and
that's
people
insane.
Have DJs
and
big speakers on boats, and they're partying and dancing. It's such a great day.
Yeah, and you're dedicated, because, I mean, you've done some travel documentaries that I've seen, which seemed like, ooh, you got a great shot of that guy walking from one boat, jumping onto another boat.
Oh, yeah, dancing. Filmed loads. I've got a YouTube clip on Amsterdam where I show Queen's Day.
Yeah.
And that was actually over two different Queen's Days.
Okay.
Because if you look where I'm in the park.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I start in Vondel Park and then I'm going around the city.
Yeah.
And then I end up on the other side of town.
Right.
There's no way I could have gotten from one side of the town to the other in one day, because the streets are full of people.
Yeah, forget about it.
And there's no way I could have ridden on a boat, which I did one year, the second year.
Yeah, yeah.
So all that on that video is a couple years.
And the Gaff Squad should point that out. But I mean, it's so true. You can spend a whole year's worth of partying in just the park, but then you're missing out the whole boat experience. You got to do the next year. You got to do the boat experience.
You
got to
do one year on a boat.
I mean, you got to do the...
But then there's drunk boaters. We had a couple of people smack into us that were really drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they've kind of tightened up the rules on the water a little bit.
Yes, they have. You know,
in the last few years.
Yeah, it's not a total free-for-all, you know, and it's not, totally
lawless.
I did
it when it was still the free-for-all.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's... Well, yeah.
Drunk people not steering. But hey, now... Yeah. Let's talk about your book, because you talk about this on stage, and I think it's a really brilliant thing where you talk about the Pulp Fiction movie was 1994. That was the same year that you moved to Amsterdam.
Yeah, this year is
20
years.
And the whole
years.
Thing where John Travolta is talking to Samuel L. Jackson, and he's saying, he's describing Amsterdam about the fries, and they smother it with mayonnaise.
And the Royale with cheese.
And the hash shops.
Yeah.
And then you talk about how different... So what are the differences in that speech from today's Amsterdam?
Man, yeah, there are a few, you know, and it's funny how before I came out here, there was no Pulp Fiction, and since then, you know, for so many Americans, everything I needed to know about Amsterdam, I learned from Pulp Fiction. And, you know, like, so tell me again about the hash bars in Amsterdam. Yeah, like, well, what you want to know? And first of all, they're called coffee shops over here. That's just a funny detail that apparently Tarantino tried to write into the script, but the Americans were like, coffee shops? Like, no, that's just the lingo over here. But you can, they don't, there's certain, protocols, you know, where you don't just walk into a restaurant and start puffing away. They want you to smoke in your home or in certain designated places. But yeah, since 2007, they have new smoking laws where you can't do, you know, you can't smoke in bars anymore. But it also applies to coffee shops. And, I mean, that was the law. So, yeah, these coffee shops.
So now you can't smoke in the coffee shop.
Right, you can't smoke, yeah. And so I was imagining if the conversation would be updated for, like, you know, the 20-year edition, you'd have to be, you know, like, Samuel L. Jackson's like, well, why do you have a smoking section in a coffee shop? You know, like, well, apparently to protect all the people in the coffee shop who don't smoke. Well, what are you doing in a coffee shop if you don't smoke? I don't fucking know. That's one thing that changed. You know, mayonnaise, that has stayed the same. God bless
them.
What
about the law? Because people always ask me about how, is it illegal for foreigners to buy weed?
Right.
And the weed pass. But we always tell them, you know, in the border towns like Maastricht and Nijmegen and Arnhem and stuff, it's illegal for foreigners because Germans and Belgians were coming over across the Dutch border.
Drug tourism.
Wiping their dicks on the curtains.
Whatever
they were doing.
That was terrible.
But in Amsterdam,
they
can recognize, because I haven't had a problem buying hash joints.
Well,
and I haven't smoked weed this trip.
Oh, really?
Only hash.
Okay.
Much more clear-headed.
Well, that is good to know.
But so what's the deal with that law?
What's the deal is it started in Maastricht, because that's really the Dutch city that has foreigners on every side, and they had such a problem with the weekends and whatever. So, yes, that turned into like a national law, which is, you know, it's basically applied city by city. The weed pass. It's basically a Dutch passport. They can only sell you weed if you get a Dutch passport. And Amsterdam as a city said, like, are you nuts? You know, like,
our whole tourism is based on
that. Yeah, like, do you want to cut our tourism in half? So Amsterdam is one city, basically in the north, anywhere that is not too close to a border with Belgium or Germany. They're like, no thanks. But when I went to Eindhoven, last year, I took Steve Hughes to Eindhoven, and I had to walk in and score some weed, and it was so ridiculous because the guy behind the desk said, like, "No, I'm sorry, you need to have a weed pass." I'm like, I said, "Well, I am a Dutch citizen. Yeah, we get that all the time, sir." You know, he's looking at me, the American, and the big tall Australian.
Americans going in trying to fake a Dutch accent.
Yeah,
could I have some weed, please?
But sure enough, I showed him.
Guys coming in wooden shoes,
right? Yeah,
in a little
I'm eating cheese.
Farmer girl hat. I am a milk maiden from Friesland.
Yes, we have seen it all before. We need to have the Dutch passport.
It was a long tram ride from Flevoland. Could I have some weed, please? Why aren't you speaking Dutch? Oh shit! You got me.
Yeah.
So, what are some what should the rest of the world know about Amsterdam?
That it is. It's funny, yeah. Those little differences—they're not so different anymore.
How things changed? It's more conservative government now?
Yes and no. I mean, they're. Maybe more recently, people know about Geert Wilders and you know, this sort of Jörg Haider, right-wing politician with the dyed blonde hair. He's a figurehead, you know. He's also a very shrewd politician, but he's out of power right now. So I get people still asking me, like, "Oh yeah, is it really right-wing politics over there?" I would say no. The pendulum seems to be swinging backward toward more reasonable immigration policy. And I'm totally biased because, you know, I have not lived in a lot of other countries, and I've become really more Dutch than I realize sometimes. So, I'm really saying this is a country that it's a small country. It's not the biggest population. It's not the hugest economy. But, man, this country punches above its weight in terms of cultural significance and economic. I just love going back to my parents' house in Chicago, visiting my family all over, like, America. Anywhere you go, you can look around the living room, and you can just point to stuff that is Dutch, originally started out Dutch, like a grandfather clock, you know. The pendulum of the grandfather clock started out as a Dutch thing. Your National Geographic magazine with, like, the microscopic pictures on the front, you know, the microscope was Leeuwenhoek, whatever. Like, all this stuff from Philips to, you know, Heineken, KLM, we all know that stuff. But, like, your bank probably has some of the money started out, you know, with some affiliate of Dutch stuff. Even, like, little simple stuff that you don't realize, like, oh, dance music. You know, like Armin van Buuren. Like, yeah, the, you know, dance. The, like, the idea of treating dance events as like a stadium style, like Sensation White goes to do some stadium in New York, Madison Square Garden, whatever. Like, yeah, that's a Dutch guy who started that out.
Oh, you're talking about like DJs, world-class DJs.
That's,
like,
yeah, that's Tiesto, more modern.
And all these guys. Exactly. Yeah. There were DJs around the world changing their names to Dutch names so they would work.
That's a new thing.
Remember, that was in the news here.
And
it's interesting. So, yeah, the DJ thing is hugely popular.
Yeah.
In Holland, and I remember when I would go to concerts in Amsterdam, you know, you go to a concert in the United States and people are like, oh man, great guitar riff. And you go to a concert in Holland and it's like, oh, good download.
Yeah, yeah. That is true, man. I mean, I was, I'm happy to say I was living in a segregated neighborhood back in the early 80s, so I was, you know, listening to hip-hop music, rap music before a lot of people, but I had no idea of the house music that was happening at the time.
That was funny. You know, it's talking about the Dutch culture with this socialism and everybody's taken care of. You don't have to be homeless.
Right.
I remember when I did that show, we went to, and I'm old enough, and you are too, to remember 60 Minutes, like in the late 80s, all the junkies, heroin addicts, would lie around Vondel Park, and they called it Junkie Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still have Americans go, oh, you spent a lot of time in Amsterdam. Do they still have that park
where
all the junkies hang out? Yeah. I go, no, that was cleaned up years ago.
Right.
Now there's a building on the outskirts of Amsterdam, and all the junkies can go there and score morphine, heroin, methadone, whatever. They can shoot up all day. And we went out there for the television show.
Wow, yeah.
There was a point to this story.
Well, I mean, it's just a practical kind of solution to... You know, the latest one that came out was New York Times. Front page of the International New York Times. Do you know who they pay to clean up the streets in Amsterdam? Drunks. I mean, they're not just junkies, but there are, like, you know, guys getting drunk sitting on the park benches. And so the city has figured out, let's pay these guys. They don't want to work for money, though. Do you know what they want to work for?
Right.
Beer.
Yeah.
The city pays these guys.
And they figured it out.
Free
Dutch
beer.
Dutch people, if they want beer, let's pay them in beer.
Exactly. And you get the quotes of these guys saying, like, I wish I could quit. I'm working on my alcohol addiction. But meanwhile, you know, a beer, that's what motivates me to work. And, I mean, sure, I'll clean up the streets.
You can be taken care of whatever your problem is. I remember what it was I was going to say. I remember... The music channel here in Holland.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching once, and there was some Dutch black rapper guy, all like, you know, ghetto, and the video is like an American rap ghetto video.
Yeah.
And he was angry. I'm angry because I can't feed my family and I ain't got nothing to eat.
Yeah.
I'm like, you live in Holland? No. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
There's all kinds of programs you could sign up for. Yeah. So you and your family could eat.
Yeah,
there's no plausibility in your anger, sir.
He's a very good actor, if you're really going to bring that off. Yeah. There's also, some good hip-hop coming out of this country. Good jazz.
What are some of the most surprising, bizarre, weird things you can tell us about Holland?
There's a chapter that I was saving for you for our last show tonight. And just to tip off a little bit, given birth to my kids at home. Some of the weirdest, like, you know, it seems so backward. And you know, like, are you guys all farmers over there? And a lot of Dutch people are. But, I mean, we ended up doing home birthing. And it was like, there's a whole story to it. And you can read about it in my book. But, I mean, for my American family, I'm still trying to explain
to them. So
it's
normal to have kids at home.
It's more normal in a way, yeah. It's and just
where
like
you don't have
saying,
to go to a hospital and spend $80,000.
You it's not a must. And just like, you know, human sexuality, nudity, whatever, it's just part of human nature. There's more of a thought of birthing as well as being part of human nature. Will do it, you know, the natural way, whatever. And luckily enough, you know, both of my kids were born without much, without complications, really. It was relatively, actually super quick. My family back home was still like, well, at what point did you, you know, go to the hospital to have the baby? Like, we didn't. But when did you get the, like, anesthesia. You know, when did you get the epidural spinal, you know, like, no, we didn't do that. Like, just yoga, deep breathing, pain, you know, washes over you, zen, you know, yeah. It's hard to explain to people, but, you know, I didn't have to go through it, but, yeah, I was, I was just taking notes. It made for a good chapter of the book.
You speak Dutch fluently.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah, I hate the language, but I'll do it if I have to.
yeah. What's your favorite Dutch word?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, gezellig springs to mind. Sure, yeah. Sure. I'll go with that.
You're right. That's mine, too.
For this interview, that's the word.
That's the best. Which they say there's no English equivalent for gezellig, but it means cozy.
Yeah, and a sociable.
Place,
and
you're in no hurry to leave.
Yeah, that's a good way.
A very comfortable, warm atmosphere.
A place
where you'd like to hang out.
Right.
That is gezellig.
And hopefully creating a sphere, you know, where an atmosphere where you can feel at home, where you can feel like you can be your best. And where you feel, yeah, like encouraged, empowered. So I guess that's what I'm trying to create.
And I think that
with
word,
this comedy tour,
that word best describes Dutch culture. That's everywhere. That's smart use of small spaces, and you have done it with this tour.
Yeah, just be yourself, man.
I wanted to say, on the Amsterdam show, Boom Chicago has now moved to the big theater at the Rosen Theater.
Yeah,
and that was my favorite show of the tour because that's where I filmed my Amsterdam late night talk show.
Yeah,
so
it's like
got so much great memories there. I mean, I interviewed Martin Van Rossum, Willem Oltmans, Frans Bauer, all these interesting, great people.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Georgina Verban, I remember.
We had Femke Halsema. She runs the Green Left Party.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had Gordon. We had all these, these massive Dutch stars. what was her name? The beautiful actress that was in Playboy and stuff all the time.
Oh boy! Back then, was that Katja Schurman?
Katja Schurman, yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Tenacious D, Steve-O.
Oh my God!
Show that I did at the Rosen Theater. Thank you for doing that and putting that together, man.
Yeah,
that was the highlight of the tour.
Yeah, it was a great show. You looked good up there.
God, what a great place to hang out.
It is a little bit harder to find than the Leipzigplein, I will say that. So, but
which is
people,
good. It's if you knew where it was, it's the street that's directly behind the palace on the dam.
Yeah.
And you just go straight
past the Anne Frank
all
house.
The way down.
Yeah.
It's about what, a mile?
Not even.
Yeah. It's a short walk
and
from the palace to the dam.
But the point is that once you get there, it's interesting to see that the space is just so much bigger, and the front bar is so much more spacious, inviting, and it's great to see that the comedians in Amsterdam have sort of gravitated toward that bar. There's also the Bada Boom mini space upstairs. That's like a rehearsal space for the Rosen Theater. And that's now being turned into a mini comedy club.
Right, and, Bob McLaren,
Wilco
and Turvine.
And some of the more, Dutch-minded, internationally-minded. Menno Stam is doing his whole YouTube live cast thing and Adi Komen and whatever. So, it's great to see that the new hotbed of comedy activism is kind of happening.
That's great, because that place is a holy temple of the ha-ha.
Yeah.
I did my show there once, and we had the big TV truck out front, and there was a massive storm, and the tree in front of the theater smashed the truck.
Wow.
And we had to stop our filming for the day.
Whew.
And now that's been replaced with another tree. But that place, it's such a beautiful old, like, Art Deco design.
Yeah, it started out as a cinema way back in, I think 100 years ago. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Ongelofelijk.
Ongelofelijk met knoflook.
So now tonight is the last night of the tour.
Yeah.
And we're in Den Haag.
Yeah, right? Sold out
at
house.
At the Pepin Theater.
Yeah, at the Pepin. So,
what has been your highlight of the tour?
highlight so far. I like the Amsterdam show. Personally, I really liked seeing your Rotterdam show with the special stuff dedicated for your in-laws in the house. And it's been so many. Every unscripted moment that I've been keeping track of. It's
I like in Antwerp, the line. As I walked around, we got to the theater really early, and I was walking around the city trying to think of jokes, and there's all these beautiful clothing shops, in the windows, and there's really expensive, beautiful clothing in all these shops everywhere you go.
It's so dominant. It's the and, high fashion.
Everyone in Antwerp dresses like shit.
Right? What is that? It's
like these people really got to work hard to dress like shit there.
And
there's great clothing everywhere. Yeah.
And you tried that out in front of the Antwerp people, and they were like, oh, all right then. But I mean, some of our good friends were there in the audience and looking at them after the show. Huh. Yeah, you have a point.
Well, I've loved the tour. Tonight we're in Den Haag, and I met my wife in Den Haag.
So. I know. Yeah. So again, a sort of homecoming, and then we got a
Den Haag is where they cut open and killed and ate the inside.
The Davids of the brothers. Davids brothers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So hopefully, I don't have a Spinoza shocking performance.
Nah. Yeah. We got
these people because I mean Den Haag, they will
rip you open like savage feral beasts. Right. But there's some bad juju in that town. We got to get rid of it. We got to bring it. Going to bring some serious laughs to them.
And well, I thought it's interesting that I met my wife in The Hague because that's where the War Crimes Tribunal is.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, what a great place to start a love story.
Pick up chicks. you know, I'm going
to... If anything goes wrong in a relationship, we can just go there and iron it out.
Yeah, right?
Can I talk to you about her not doing the laundry?
Well, yeah, really.
She'll go, can I talk to you about him not doing the dishes?
If you ever need more laundry done, then you know where to go.
Oh, well, you did my laundry.
No, I'm telling you, man, if you need a home away from home, and I don't know, I think at some point, I predict I'm going to see Tom Rhodes buying some real estate here in Amsterdam.
Wow.
So, hey, neighbor of the future.
All right.
You're brother. Welcome with open arms.
Well, hopefully I'll have a Bach feet with some little kids in it. We'll be heading over to your house.
All right. If you need babysitting, I'll...
All right, Greg. Let's go take some ass in Den Haag.
Let's go.
You're a prince.
Thank you, Tom.
Shalom, amigo.
I get the shalom.